On the path of bhakti, surrender is not a means to get to a place where we don't have to serve anymore. According to the Mayavad school of philosophy, the absolute truth is the one supreme Brahman, and everything else is an illusion. This material world is false. And the misconception that we're independent of God, the jiva, is only a temporary state of maya. Ultimately, the jivatma, when it goes beyond the illusion of separateness, it realizes it is God. There is no individuality. There is no personality. There's only pure existence, sat. And when the absolute truth, that all-pervading, impersonal, one supreme, descends into this world, he takes on a form, accepts names, gives teachings, performs pastimes, but it is all within the mode of goodness. Therefore, ultimately, it is temporary and it is maya. The absolute truth descends and appears in a form and a personality that is maya, just to instruct us how to get out of maya. And there are various forms of religion and yoga. And when we understand those things, when we chant these names of God, when we meditate on these forms of God, when we follow these teachings of God, then ultimately we realize that we are God. There is no separateness. And we realize that all the avatars and our own individual existence as a devotee was all an illusion. So this misconception was extremely prevalent throughout India. According to the Vedas, the Puranas, it is described that Lord Vishnu instructs Shiva, who is the greatest of the devotees, to teach this type of philosophy, because ultimately it makes everything unimportant, illusion. It can bring about, when it extends beyond just the philosophy, it opens the doors to immorality and anything goes. And in this way, it pushes forward very rapidly the influence of the age of Kali Yuga. But ultimately, the Lord has his purpose. And he sent great acharyas to come to reestablish, because these teachings were based on the Vedic scriptures, but misinterpretations of Vedic scriptures. But then the Lord was going to send his own most beloved devotees and his own avatars as well. And he would eventually come himself personally. Yes, you accept Vedas? Well, can't you see what it says? Prema Pumartamahan, that love for God is the ultimate eternal nature of the soul. The absolute truth never comes under the influence of Maya. Lord Brahma himself spoke, Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchit Ananda Vigraha. His Vigraha, his form, his personality, his pastimes are eternal. They are full of knowledge and they are full of bliss. Mamayavam so jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana. All living beings are eternally part of me. So here in Udupi, as part of the Lord's divine plan to establish what Krishna told in Gita, only through bhakti can I be understood as I am standing before you. Janma karma cha me divyam evam yo viditatvata tyaktva deham punarjanma naiti mameti jwar. One who understands the transcendental. Transcendental means divya, means beyond maya, beyond material existence. Pure truth. One who understands the transcendental nature of my appearance and my activities never takes birth again in this world, but attains my abode. So in this Udupi area is a small village, Pajak Chetra. And that is the place where Sripad Madhvacharya appeared within this world. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is Krishna himself, the Bhagavatam describes that in the age of Kali, Krishna will appear not in a blackish complexion, in a golden complexion, as Garga Muni explained during Krishna's name-giving ceremony. Krishna Varnam Tvasakrishnam Sankopanga Parashana Yagyai Sankirtanapurela. And he will establish the Yuga Dharma of the congregational chanting of the holy names of the Lord. But he came in the role of his own devotee. Because Krishna already explained everything in Bhagavad Gita. And Srimad Bhagavatam already describes beyond what the Gita teaches, how to live the Gita. Through stories of Prahlad and Dhruva and Ambarish, and ultimately, it culminates in Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan, the gopis and the gopas. And the culmination of the entire Bhagavatam is Radha's love for Krishna. Krishna left everyone to receive the service and the love of Sri Radha. But in Kali Yuga, so many misinterpretations, so many miscalculations, and how to do it. So Krishna appeared in the mood of Sri Radha's love, in the role of a devotee to teach us. And part of teaching us was the importance of accepting Guru Parampara. Accepting a guru in a sampradaya, a pure disciplic succession of great souls. Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains how Lord Chaitanya, he accepted the essence of all the four great Vaishnava sampradayas. From Ramanujacharya, he extracted service to the Vaishnavas and the path of pure devotion, unmixed with karma or jnana or any other materialistic motivation. From the Nimbark Sampradaya or the Rudra Sampradaya or the Kumar Sampradaya, He accepted the principles of the esteem of the gopis and Sri Radha's supreme love. From the Rudra Sampradaya, which later Ballabhacharya accepted, he accepted the path of grace, dependent fully on the mercy of the Supreme Lord, and unmotivated devotional service is the ultimate goal of life. And from Madhvacharya, the worship of Krishna and the refutation of Mayavad philosophy, and all those philosophies that distracted humanity's attention from pure devotional service. Undivided devotion to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu personally accepted his initiation in the line of Sripad Madhvacharya. Baladev Vidyabhushan, who was the first Gaudiya Vaishnav to write a commentary on the Brahma Sutras, was trained within the Madhva Sampradaya. And later in the association as Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and other great Gaudiya Vaishnavas became very deeply surrendered to the life and teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the mood of Vrindavan. So all of our acharyas in our Gaudiya Sampradaya feel this deep connection to Sripad Madhvacharya and often quote his teachings, his books. And in gratitude, we would like to speak just a few things about his life. In Pajak Chetra lived Madhya Geha Bhatt, who was a great Brahmin, and his wife Vedavati. They had no children. In course of time, they had two sons, but when they were very young, they died. They had one daughter, but they yearned to have a son, not just for family purposes, because Krishna in the Paramatma is within the heart of everyone. And he orchestrates and stages the appearance of great personalities at times. So they had this deep longing to have a son in the service of the Lord. And they didn't take it cheaply. They understood it was dependent on a higher power, because they wanted to serve the Lord, who is that higher power, through having a son. So they decided to perform tapasya. They were doing all sorts of fasting, pujas, orienting practically their entire attention of life for this purpose. Madhya Geha Bhatt and Vedavati at the Anandeshwar temple especially, they offer their prayers, their devotion, regularly going there to do pujas, to surrender their hearts, their lives. And they did this for 12 years. Never giving up hope, because they were performing this service for the pleasure of Lord Ananteshwar. Ananteshwar is Lord Narayan. This area of India is sometimes called Parasuram Kshetra. Long ago, We read in the Bhagavad Purana and other Puranas, the Supreme Lord Vishnu appeared as Parasuram. And seeing egoism, selfishness, self-centered corruption among power-hungry leaders of the world, he as a Brahmin took the role of a Kshatriya. And for 21 generations, he freed the world from such corruption. And ultimately, he conquered the world. But he didn't do anything for himself. When everything was in order and nice, he took the entire world, everything he had conquered, and gave it to the Brahmins, headed by Kashyapa Muni. And there was nothing left for himself. But he wanted a place to do his bhajan. But he couldn't take away what he had already given. So he came to this area and he shot an arrow with a mantra. And the arrow went out to the sea. And where that arrow landed, the sea receded. And what was once ocean became land. From Kanyakumari up to around the area of Gokarna. So he didn't take away anything he had given. It was brand new land. And that is where he resided. And there's many beautiful stories, but he personally appeared for the pleasure of his devotee in the form of the Ananteshwar Murti, who appears to be Lord Shiva, but is Lord Vishnu. And close to there is the Chandramalishwar temple, where Chandra, the presiding lord of the moon planet, performed tapasya and worship to Lord Shiva, and Lord Shiva appeared as that Shiva Lingam to him, to bless him and to bless the world. So these, in this very ancient town of Udupi, were the two temples. Madhyageha would go to the Ananteshwar temple every day from Pajakchetra and spend many, many, many hours. And eventually, when the Lord's, by his own will, he sent his beloved devotee. In the Madhva Sampradaya, it is understood that Vayudev appeared three times. In Treta Yuga, he appeared as Hanuman. In Dwarpa Yuga, as the elder brother of Arjuna, Bhima. And in the Kali Yuga, he appears as Sripad Madhvacharya. The child was so beautiful, so wonderful in every way. There was a name-giving ceremony where the whole family came together and Brahmins were chanting mantras. It's filled with devotion. And the child was given the name Vasudev. There are many stories and books written about the life of Madhvacharya. Just a few very well-known stories. His power of devotion, his intellect, and his physical strength as well were extraordinary. After all, He was an expansion of the same force that appeared as Hanuman and Bhima. When he was just a baby, his mother one time went out and asked Vasudev's sister, please take care of him while I'm away. And he started, little baby, started crying. And she didn't know what to do. He was hungry. And they were just a poor Brahmin family. They didn't have much wealth. They just had a little home in Pajakchetra. But they had some cows. And the parents would boil what's called horse gram. It's a very, very cheap food that you feed cows. And there was a big pile of it, giant pile of it. And the little baby ate the entire pile. Cow food. It's impossible for humans to digest it. What to speak of an infant baby who's just drinking the milk of a mother. So the mother came back and she said, where's the horse gram? And the daughter says, Vasudev ate it all. So she was sure her son was going to die. Nobody can eat all that. And she did her prayers and her pujas. And Vasudev didn't, he was just smiling. He didn't have the slightest indigestion. Another day when he was just a tiny little baby, the mother and father were looking all over for him. Where did he go? Right at sunrise, he disappeared. And somebody said that we saw him after they were looking frantically all over the village of Pajakshetra. They were told that we saw around sunrise a giant bull. And little Vasudev was holding on to the tail of the bull as the bull was going into the forest. They were looking all day for him. They couldn't find him. Finally, right around sunset, 12 hours later, the bull comes back and little Vasudev smiling, holding on to the tail of the bull. When he was just around 3 or 4 years old, he was playing with his friends. And his mother told him that, go get your father, tell him lunch is ready. So little Vasudev ran, and he could run really fast, and told his father, lunch is ready. His father looked really disturbed. He said, I cannot go home. Because I took a loan for farming purposes to buy a cow. I took a loan some time back, and the person who gave me the loan wants me to pay him back, but I don't have anything to pay him. So he's sitting on the steps outside of our house. And he refuses to eat anything until I pay him back. This is what kind of culture it was. If debtors just did that to people today, there would be no problem for us, right? Now they do court cases, they call mafia people, they put you in jail. But in those days, they didn't have to do that. They would just come and fast. And Vasudev's father, how could I go in and eat when he's fasting and he's a guest at our house? So he couldn't eat. The father had to fast. If he fasted, he couldn't come home. He would offer him food he wouldn't eat, so the father couldn't eat. So the father just, I can't go home. That was the type of integrity people had in those days. So little Vasudev, there was a tamarind tree just near his house. It's still there. And tamarind seeds fell from it. And little Vasudev picked up a handful of tamarind seeds and gave them. Now there's different interpretations. Some say that the tamarind seeds turned into gold coins. So the person took them and was very happy and left. Others, even though they were tamarind trees seeds, they were offered in such a way that this person was transformed. So he left, and he was really happy. And after some time, Vasudev's father, Madhyageha Bhatt, he got money to pay him back. And when he went to pay him back, he said, no, your son already paid me back. I can't accept anything more. He fully paid me. On another occasion, the mother and father went to a marriage in a village not too far from here. And there were all these festivities going on in the village. And suddenly little Vasudev, who was just a small child, he disappeared. And the parents were looking everywhere for him, but they couldn't find him. And ultimately, they were asking people, did you see this little boy? And somebody would say, he went that way. We saw him some hours ago. So the father went that way and met somebody else. Did you see my little son, Vasudev? He said, yeah, he was running this way. Finally, he came to the Anantheshwar temple. And the little tiny child was offering his full prostrated obeisances to Anantheshwar. The boy walked 16 miles, 20 kilometers to get there, all alone. So when the father saw him offering his obeisances, he was wondering, how could my little boy do this? And he said, who did you come with? That's what the father asked. And Vasudev said, Bhagavan, he's always with me. This was quite awakening for the father. And the father prayed to Anandeshwar, please, Bhagavan, always be there with my son. He's very restless. When he turned just around 4 years old, if you go to Pajak Chetra, which many of you have won today, there's a big stone. And on that stone, it was the writing pad in which Madhyageha Bhatt was teaching for the first time the alphabet to his little son, Vasudev. He said, this is, and he was giving him the Sanskrit alphabet. And little Vasudev was, and the next day, he went to give him the next lesson. Vasudev said, you already showed me that. I already know it. And he wrote the whole alphabet. When he was about 4 years old, there was a festival. And his mother went to that festival. And little Vasudev was sitting on his mother's lap. There was a scholar whose name was Shiva Bhatt. And he was very famous at reciting and explaining the Puranas. But he was explaining it in a very, very speculative way. And there was so many people, the whole village was there at this festival listening to him speak with great respect and honor because he was very famous. And all of a sudden, as he was speaking, this little tiny boy sitting on the lap of mother, he called out, your explanation is not approved by Vyasadeva or Sukadeva Goswami.
this elderly scholar?
He said, what do you know? And then little Vasudeva explained the proper conclusions of the Puranas. He told the story and the philosophical explanation of what it was supposed to teach us. And the person was totally defeated. That was the first lecture of Sripad Madhvacharya. From the lap of his mother. And then he came home and he told his father that this is what that Shiva Bhatta was saying and this is what I said. Who do you think is right? His father was shocked. He said, Vasudev, you were right. You were right. He was so determined. Even when he was a boy of just 3-4 years old, there was 4 tirthas or kuns in the 4 directions near Pajakchetra. And it would take several kilometers to walk to all of them. He would take his bath in all 4 every day. And his mother was really worried. She would say, you shouldn't, you know, you're just a little child. And in those days, going through fields and forests, there's dacoits and there's snakes and there's wild animals. And it's a long distance for a little child. She would tell him, please don't go all these places. But he would go anyway. Because it was a religious activity. It was purifying to go to these holy places. So when he saw his mother was really worried, one day he took a stick as she was expressing to him how worried she was that he was traveling so many places every day. He took a stick and he rubbed it against a rock. And from the rock, right in front of everybody's eyes, water started emerging and it filled a small lake. And all the waters from all those other 4 lakes would fill that lake. And he told his mother, now I can, and it was right outside his house. It's called Vasudev Tirtha, still there today. He told his mother, just to make you happy now, I will bathe here and I will fulfill going to all the others. It came the time for his Upanayam, where his father gave him the Gayatri Mantra. And one day, just after that, little Vasudev was holding a stick. He was holding it like a sannyasi holds a danda. He was just about 4, 5. And his father said, why are you holding a stick like that? And Vasudev, with great determination, little child, he said, I will establish the Vaishnav Dharma within this world and eradicate all Mayavad and misconceptions. And father, he said, it's Kali Yuga. Nobody will accept Vaishnav Dharma in this age of Kali Yuga. This is very high philosophy. The father said, for people to accept Vaishnava philosophy in this age of Kali, it's like for your little stick to sprout. So Vasudev took the stick and pushed it in the ground, and it became a tree. Because he wanted to show that what is ordinarily impossible, by the grace of the Lord, Narayan, everything becomes possible. And he was also giving a preview into what his mission would be in his life. The biographers like to tell the story of how in his previous life as Bhima, in the Himalayas, when he was going to collect flowers for Draupadi, an enormous demon attacked Bhima. His name was Maniman, and Bhima killed him. But Maniman was very upset. So he knew Bhima was coming again as Madhvacharya, and he wanted revenge. So there's a place near Pajakchetra called Vimangiri. And near this Vimanagiri, on the hill, there's a temple of Durga Devi. So little Vasudev was playing. He would like to play. He was very playful. And as he was going to the Durga temple, this Maniman took the form of an enormous poisonous snake. And he lunged to bite and devour the little boy Vasudev. And Vasudev, with one toe, crushed his head. And while he was doing this, he was late for lunch. So his mother called him, and she was really worried, and he was a distance away. So to not worry his mother, with one jump, he went all the way from this rock to his home. And when you go to Pajakchetra, you'll see a very holy place for the followers of Madhvacharya, where his footprint is still there. And even the print of Maniman is there. He went to Gurukul. And surprisingly, even as a child, he knew all the lessons better than his own teachers. He was so brilliant. And after he came out of his Gurukul, he was hardly 9 years old, just approaching 10, when he decided to take sannyas. Because sannyas for him was the complete freedom to dedicate his body, mind, life, and words for the spiritual benefit of humanity. To have no other obligations, no distractions, to give everything for the whole of humanity. So there was an ashram not too far where there was a saint named Achyuta Preksha, who was a sannyasi. And Vasudev really was attracted to him. One is because Achyuta Preksha came from an ancient heritage, which began with Narayan, and it's a long lineage of sannyas. So he wanted to teach the world the importance of connecting with parampara. So he would study with Achyuta Preksha. And he would be away from home, sometimes for days at a time. Now, some of you are parents. If your child is only 9 years old and he's away for days at a time, you get worried. So the father would go and find him at this ashram, studying, training to be a sannyasi. The father was mortified. The mother was horrified when he explained that he wanted to take sannyas for the salvation of humanity. And they were pleading with him. They were chastising with him. They were doing everything possible. They said, you cannot take, you're only a child. And besides that, we're very old. Who's going to take care of us in our old age if you leave home forever? But he was determined. So he would go out and travel with the Achyuta Preksha. And one day, his mother and father, they found him in a forest with his Achyuta Preksha, and he was preparing himself. And they were pleading with him. They were begging him, come home, come home. And ultimately they bowed down to him. And he smiled. He said, Krishna is speaking through you. Because the only time parents bow down to a child is if the child is sannyasi. So Krishna is telling me through you that I should be a sannyasi. Another time the father, he said, if you take sannyas, I will end my life. And he was really angry with this child. And little Vasudev, he took his outer cloth and tore it to the size of a sannyasi's kopan and put it on. He said, go ahead, do it. His father didn't end his life. Vasudev knew he wouldn't. Parents have... I don't know how many times I've heard that. But anyways, when little Vasudev said, go ahead and do it, the father became really like broken. He said, 12 years I performed tapasya to have you as a son, and now you just want to leave me? And Vasudev said, all right, I will take sannyas after you have another son. Then you'll have a son. And then little Vasudev said, and then the father, after he heard this, that he's going to stay around, and he was having... Madhyageha Bhatt had no intention of getting any other sons. So this will assure that he's going to stay with us throughout our lives. So with that in mind, his father said, actually, you know, I'm a great scholar of the scriptures, and I know the Vedas, and I understand the greatness of taking sannyas. So for me, it's not such a problem. But for your mother, she gave birth to you. She'll be totally brokenhearted. So Vasudev, he said, so after you have a son, that means you have given me your permission. I just have to convince my mother, right? And if I convince her, it's all right with you? So he was trapped. So after some time, miraculously, they had a son. The next year, at this time, little Vasudev's 10 years old. And he went to his, and when he, and he's, meanwhile, he's at Achyuta Preksha's ashram, training to be a sannyasi. And when he found out that the son was born, he came home. And he went to his mother, and he looked at the little baby, his little brother, and he was so happy. He said, now you have a son, so now I could take sannyas. And the mother said, no, no, I will not give you permission to take sannyas. Little Vasudev said, I will give you two choices. If you don't give me permission to take sannyas, I promise you, you will never see my face again for the rest of your life. And if you do give me permission, I'll be a sannyasi, but we'll meet each other. She didn't give permission or not give permission, but in her silence, she gave permission. So he went back to Achyuta Preksha, and in the Anandeshwar temple, he was given the danda, and he took the vows of a sannyasi at the age of 10, and was given the name Purna Pragya by his guru. Now Vasudev, who has become Purna Pragya Tirtha, He was so deeply learned, and he had such compassion and such influence over others. Even his own guru, he was a Vaishnava, but because Shankar philosophy and Mayavad philosophy was so prominent everywhere, that he had confusions too. But his disciple had no confusions. In fact, one time before he met Vasudev, Anandeshwar, the Murti, spoke to him, Achyuta Praksha, and said, "You have confusions, but you will have a disciple who will liberate you from birth and death and teach you the highest knowledge." So that disciple was now his sannyasi disciple, Purna Pragya. And he started teaching. And Achyuta Praksha, seeing the wisdom and the profound mastery over philosophy and the incredible pure character and devotion of his disciple, he consecrated him as his successor and made him the acharya of the whole mutt. Now, a 10-year-old boy, the acharya of a mutt, and in those days, debate was the big sport of India. If you were a champion debater, you were very highly esteemed by everyone. So some of the greatest scholars were coming to debate this 10-year-old boy. Buddhisagar was one of them. He was very, very renowned throughout all of India. And little Vasudev, he and Buddhisagar and his disciple, they presented such incredibly complex, logical, philosophical, scriptural challenges. And they were, there's no way a boy could possibly answer these things, because it took them a whole lifetime to work out these different systems. And little Vasudev completely defeated them. And then Vasudev said, "Now I have some questions for you." And they said, "It's late, the sun has already set, we'll come back tomorrow." He said, "No, no, answer my question now." They said, "No, no, we'll come back tomorrow." He said, "Answer my question now." Little boy, he said, "No, we'll come back tomorrow." So he said, "All right." So that night they disappeared forever. Purna Pragya Tirtha wanted to go to Varanasi to bathe in the Ganga. But Achyuta Praksha, his guru, was so deeply attached to his disciple, who was also like his own guru now, he couldn't tolerate the separation from him. Now, this is a very interesting thing, because the conception of an ascetic, a sannyasi, is that you're detached from everything in this world. But attachment to a Vaishnav, attachment to Krishna, attachment to seva, not a particular seva, but the spirit of seva for the pleasure of the Lord, that attachment is a much higher, deeper spiritual state than just detachment. In bhakti, the whole purpose of becoming detached from the distractions, the enjoyments, and the dualities of this world is so that we can be completely attached to remembering Krishna. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was a sannyasi, the crest jewel of all sannyasis. But he taught that the highest renunciation is that of the gopis of Vrindavan. And what was the renunciation of gopis? Their total attachment to Krishna. The simplicity of their hearts, always remembering Krishna, always singing about Krishna, every moment performing some seva for the pleasure of Krishna. That absorption in Krishna is the highest renunciation. So it was really the fruit, the culmination of Achyuta Preksha's lifetime of detachment and renunciation is he became so completely attached to this devotee who was his disciple. And when he heard that Purnaprajna wanted to go to Varanasi, now that's Udupi, Anandachvar temple is just a few minutes away from here. That's a long way. He wanted to bathe in the Ganga. So Achyuta Preksha was begging him not to go. When Achyuta Preksha coronated Purnaprajna as the guru, the acharya for his whole mat and his successor, he gave him another name, Ananda Tirtha. And because he presented this system of philosophy so clearly, based on such logic and such comprehensive scriptural evidence, and gave people a direct experience of this truth, that the jiva is eternally the servant of Bhagavan. That we never become God. To love God. Yesterday, several of our brahmacharis met with His Holiness Vishvesh Tirtha Maharaj in the Pejawar Math. And one asked about, was it yourself, Nityananda Prabhu? What was your question?
Vedic statements definitely in many places says that the living entities and Krishna are different. In some places it also mentions that everything is one. So Madhvacharya is speaking about difference, five differences. How we accommodate the Vedic statement which says about oneness? That was a question I asked him.
So Madhvacharya was very much, when you see photos of him, he has two fingers like this, Dvaita, the distinction between the jiva and the Paramatma. Eternally, every jiva is distinct from every other jiva. And there's unlimited jivas. And every jiva is always distinct in a subordinate position as the servant of the Supreme Soul, the Paramatma. And material nature, or prakriti, is the eternal energy of the Lord. And it's always separate from the jiva and from the Paramatma. So Nityananda Prabhu was asked, Pejawar Math Swami yesterday, that how is it that Madhvacharya was giving so much emphasis on Dvaita, the dualism, when in the Vedas there's so many places where it talks about oneness? And it's really interesting how he answered that question. He said, the very essence of Madhvacharya's teachings was given by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his principle of Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva. Inconceivable oneness and difference. And it was, the way he explained it was so nice, because Shripad Madhvacharya, there are volumes and volumes of books and literatures describing the intricacies of the philosophical, logical, rational, experiential evidences to prove the Dvaita system. And he saw that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in one line encapsulates everything. Inconceivable, simultaneous one indifference. And he said, qualitatively, we are identical to God. Like a sun ray, qualitatively is identical to the sun. But quantitatively, exactly the way Prabhupada explains, quantitatively, we are always subordinate. We are apart, and Krishna is always the whole. We are eternal, the Atma is eternally a person. And the Paramatma is eternally the person. Nityo nityanam chetanas chetananam eko bahunam yobhidadati kama. There is one supreme eternal, and there are limitless subordinate eternals. Those subordinate eternals are always depending upon the one supreme eternal. So the simultaneous one indifference. Qualitatively, we are Satchit Ananda, eternal, full of knowledge and bliss, as Krishna is. But Krishna knows everything. Krishna is the ultimate source of everything that exists. And we are eternally his fragmental parts. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu made it so simple. Jivera Swarupoi Krishna Rinityadas. That we're eternally servants of Krishna. And this is where the Srimad Bhagavatam, we find in the prayers of the greatest personalities, they never desire anything material. They never desire mystic yogic cities or even liberation. This is the very foundation of the Srimad Bhagavat philosophy. The prayer of Prahlad, the prayer of Dhruva, the prayer of Ambarish, the prayer of all of the gopis and gopas is always eternally loving service to Narayan or Krishna. Hanumanji. So many different types of people worship him. But to worship him means to follow in his footsteps also. Hanuman, the only desire he had, he was willing to jump across oceans, lift mountains, single-handedly go into the most dangerous place in the world, burn the city of Lanka face to face against Ravana, fight wars. He was willing to do anything, everything. And when Ram offered him any benediction, all he wanted was to always remember the Lord, to always chant the names of the Lord, and to always be the servant of the servant of the servant of the Lord. That is our constitutional nature. It's so simple. When we come in contact with great acharyas who have realized this, it's just so simple to understand that these impersonalistic misconceptions seem so obviously limited and flawed. But without that association, it's incredible how much the world is affected by it. So Achyuta Preksha, he was such a great renounced sannyasi, and the perfection of his renunciation was he was so deeply attached to Madhvacharya. He said, don't go to Varanasi, it's too far away, I can't be without you so long. So, to please his guru. After 3 days, the Ganges was going to come. There's a kund called the Anandeshwar Srovar. And in one of the corners, white water started bubbling into it. And Anandeshwar revealed to Achyuta Preksha that the Ganges from Varanasi, the Ganges from the spiritual world, is going to enter into that kund. And then Madhvacharya doesn't have to go to Varanasi. He could bathe in the Ganges here. And from that time, that kund is known as Madhava Srovar. And I think you've all seen it. It's that really beautiful kund that's right next to Udupi Krishna Temple. And in the middle, there's a nice pavilion, and they do Tulsi Puja and various other sevas there. Madhvacharya, still a boy, but people from all directions were coming to hear him speak. He would speak from the Puranas, he would speak from the Upanishads, he would speak from the Srimad Bhagavatam. People would listen with rapt attention. He was becoming so incredibly popular. And even great scholars, some from different Nirvishesh and Shunyavad schools would come because they understood that this person, if we don't defeat him, we're defeated. And he would effortlessly defeat them all. But he spoke with such love, such compassion, such conviction. And one day his father from Pajakchetra came to Anandeshwar temple where Madhvacharya was preaching every day. And his father sat in a crowd of people and saw his son and heard how he was preaching so convincingly, the highest philosophy of ecstatic, loving, devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. His father began to cry in ecstasy. He was so proud to see his little Vasudev, a great sannyasi who was transforming the world. And his father was happy forever after. In fact, later on, after his parents passed away, and they were both, when he came back and told his mother, they were so happy. Look at our son, what he is doing for the whole world in the service of Lord Narayan. And when the mother and father grew old and passed away, his little brother became Madhvacharya's disciple and took sannyas also. As people by the thousands and thousands were coming to Udupi just to see him, to meet him, to hear him, he went on a tour of southern India. And it's getting late, so we'll continue tomorrow. But let us have kirtan now. Thank you very much.